When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Also, this is more for Casey. Casey, I 100% lost connection to our Zoom for a hot second. So there's probably a moment in there where I'm like, what the fuck? Just take that audio, like 30 seconds of that audio out.
And then put it somewhere else.
Yeah. And then suddenly, John, it's what the fuck is going on?
It's a much easier flight back. The weather gets better as you approach the shore, even though better still means raining. Water is sliding down, like cascading from the various drains around Upper Nordia and beating down hard on the large tarp that is covering the Uhuru. Where do you go? Are you going right back to the ship?
The gold? Yeah, I believe that's where my brain goes.
Gable is going to do a quick round around Lower Nordia to kind of see where the inlets are.
Ooh, cool. Ooh. Make a perception check.
Perception of what?
Average with two black dice. So two purple, two black.
Then I might as well just not do this.
Really?
Like, truly, all I have is yellow on perception.
Try it.
Hey, Liz, you should try it.
Oh, I'll try it. Actually.
One triumph.
No, yeah, no. That's just four threats.
Four threats. Okay, so
yeah.
You look down over the coast, and Gable is trying to juggle two facts in their mind as they are looking for possible inlets. From what you know of the bay, from what has been described to you and pointed out to you on a map earlier, that there is, or at least was, very shallow sandbars and essentially drowned land that surrounds the outer reaches of the Bay of Nordia, which would make it very difficult for ships the size of the large and medium ship to actually come in and shore up on Nordia, because there is just land masses in the way and those ships could easily moor themselves. The smaller ships, however, do have the potential, especially with a lot of the rainfall, to move in. But you rightly cannot tell right now, because of the rain and because of how dark it is, exactly how much the water levels have risen here and what dangers that presents to the group. If there are personnel who are going to be coming off of those large ships, they're probably going to have to row in a little bit. That's what you'd guess. With that knowledge, as you survey the land beneath you, you cannot see where the best place for them to land would be, because it seems like there are ample places to land everywhere. To march into Nordia, you'd have to cross that bridge, which is right now being overwhelmed by water. So there are probably new places to land even closer to Nordia than there were before. You're looking around, seeing strategically, if I were a mariner, where would I go? And the problem is, there are just so many options.
Jeez. Oh, boy. All right, then Gable heads back to the ship.
Metatron will cruise, kind of doing a hot dog maneuver beneath the tarp. Will land like full on the deck of the ship. You see, waiting for you is Nodos, Spit, and the captain. What you got for us, Gable?
Nothing good, but I think we knew that.
In a time such as this, any information is good information.
Thank you. That's why you're my friend? Colleague?
Why did you back it off?
I don't know. I don't know what your feelings are. We don't talk about them, really, so I didn't want to overstep my boundaries. Anyway, we have 5 vessels, 3 smaller ones. I need you to remind me, James, I wasn't listening. How many small ones, big ones?
Oh, Liz.
There was 1 big one. There was a medium one. There were 3 small ones.
There we go. Why we do things if you're not going to remember them.
Because you're there. You're the book. You can be the book.
Bone-filled meat dice.
Be the book you want to see in this world.
So Gable tells them what they saw and a rough counting of here's where the Mariner was last. Here's what we can feel. Here's a guesstimate based on the connections that they felt of how many personnel are on the ships in total. And also describing and really discussing with the rest of them the potential speed of each of those individual ships, because some of them will be faster than the others.
This is a difficult circumstance. We don't know if they're going to be within bombardment range. Each of those larger ships will be equipped with cannons that could be ruinous if they're able to anchor close enough to port.
Several of the ships will be able to anchor at this very moment. There's truly no way to tell. I tried once, and I couldn't do it, so I assume that's enough information that no one will be able to tell ever again.
Well, you are the person that we trusted as the scout for this mission, so we'll have to just trust your instincts and not bother with second guessing.
I mean, other people could scout. Other people could do it. It doesn't have to be just me. I'm not that great at looking at things. Other people could look.
Spit and Nodos look to the captain. The captain has a hand on his chin, and he appears to be thoughtfully stroking his beard. And then he looks to you, Gable. It is a questioning look. A look that signals to you that he would like an opinion. How confident are you in your scouting abilities?
I'm confident in my abilities if I can use magic, but that's iffy and stressful.
The captain just makes a gesture at the air. I suppose we could spare some crew. Anything that we do, we're either going to be pulling people away from fortifying the walls of Nordia or from the scrape. So if you think it's necessary, Helmsperson, we could send out a scouting party to see where they might land.
That'll take too long. It'll take too long.
That would only be 2 or 3 people at most. If it's something that we need to do, you can give the order to do it. And I think this is a good opportunity for me to explain to you and the audience the mechanics that you're going to have access to during this adventure.
Oh no, it's one of those things. It starts.
Yeah, James built another game within a game.
The nesting dolls of fate. So what I have for you, you are not in this alone. You have a big pirate ship full of people that can help you on this adventure against the Mariner. And as you perform actions, you basically will have three green dice whenever you want the crew to do something. You can decide to commit individual members of the crew to certain tasks. If you do, they will upgrade the dice that you're rolling to accomplish whatever you're trying to accomplish. However, that will also increase the risk that you incur. Every time you roll a failure on an action involving the crew, you will roll on what I've called the Uhuru Death Chart. We have listed every Christ. Single crew member that's ever been talked about aboard the ship of the Uhuru.
Wow. What's that number
right
at?
Right now, named crew members, we have 31, probably a bit more than 31, as some of these crew members I've grouped together. And these are the people that, that have like officially been accepted or have been mentioned as side characters and whatnot. Every failure you get will be one roll on the Uhuru death chart. So if, and we'll be rolling a D100 dice. So if you roll anything 31 and below, that will affect one of your crew members. Now, everybody on the ship has a number of hit points that I've assigned based on how much plot entanglement they have, how popular they seem to be with the audience, and how much I like doing the voice.
So Spit's got probably some pretty high HP.
Spit has higher HP than all of us. All the main cast.
Least expendable member of the crew.
James will kill us before he kills Spit.
I can't wait for the sequel to this show called Spit Immortal.
But there are crew members who have no hit points at all, which means if they get rolled on this death chart, that will be their immediate demise. The other thing to think about is you can risk additional crew members on this. You can say, I'm going to take Ryan Lochte, who is a member of the Uhuru crew, and I'm going to assign Ryan Lochte to this task. You'll be able to upgrade the dice that you're rolling for it, but you will also add 10 new slots on your death chart roll. So if you commit Ryan Lochte to a task, instead of being a 31 and below, possibly hurting a crew member, you'll have 31 and below like normal, and then 10 slots that are dedicated to Ryan Lochte.
Wow.
So that'll be anything 32 through 40. And that moves on. You can dedicate multiple crew members to roll, basically filling up your death chart to 90% chance that if you roll failure, someone will die. However, each crew member you individually assign a task will also upgrade the dice that you're doing. There are certain tasks that like you can only upgrade your dice so much because like there's only so much you can suggest that adding more people to a problem is actually going to help it be solved more efficiently. But that's it. That's your Uhuru death chart. So while we're in the middle of this adventure, you have a bunch of options to command the crew and send them about or around the island. But, you know, it could be lethal.
So in that Ryan Lochte scenario, if he's whatever slot he is, and then also 32 to 40, do all of those slots have the same like hit points?
Yes. So it'll be putting Ryan Lochte's hit points in all those slots. So Ryan, I hate to say, unfortunately has 0 hit points. So if Ryan were to get rolled on that, he would die. However, if you were to take a crew member like Overboard, who hosts a segment on our Dear Uhurus with his HR center, like that's somewhat important to the show. So I'll reveal that Overboard has a whole 4 hit points. So if you were to roll Overboard on the death chart, that would merely move his hit points down by 1. However,
oh, that's not so bad.
Well, I want to point this out. You can't heal these hit points. When these hit points are reduced, they're gone. The only way their hit points might go up is if you somehow involve the character in heavier plot circumstances and I'm forced to reevaluate how popular and significant that character is. But if you mill down somebody's hit points, you're just going to burn right through them.
But feasibly, we could send Spit out on every task.
Well, you can try. I can tell you, I have worked out rules for Spit. I know exactly what'll happen.
Roll for insubordination. I want to check in on a few of our friends. Like, how's it looking for Jerry?
Which Jerry? Which Jerry?
Normal jerk Jerry.
Off. Jerk off. Jerry, comma jerk
oh,
off.
Oh,
master.
Oh, jerk off, Jerry. Why didn't you say there are a lot?
If he does not,
there are actually a lot of Jerrys here.
If he doesn't have 69 HP, that's a goddamn crime.
I will let you know that jerk off Jerry does have 3 hit points.
Okay, that's pretty good. What about Toku?
Toku is also I like standing Toku. At 3. About Toku.
Okay,
you
good.
Know, Toku is a character cool. that, you know, Tyler plays, and that's actually really useful for me to have in chaotic scenes. So he's got a few more hit points. Jerkoff Jerry is a very funny character. People love to talk about Jerkoff Jerry, but they also hate all of the things that Jerkoff Jerry says. So I did give him a few hit points, but not many because I think... we're going to reach a point where we'll probably all be very glad to be relieved of jerk off Jerry.
Yeah.
And yet no matter what, we'll still have Spit. Yes.
James, could you do me a favor and send me the list?
Oh.
Or do I just have to remember?
No, that seems reasonable. Let me pull up.
Do me a flavor.
Thank you, Pod Daddy.
Pod Daddy.
You're welcome, Pod BB.
Oh, okay. Oh, I like that you have what their voices sound like. That's fun.
Yeah. This was a list that was actually originally compiled by a fan of the show that I adapted into the Uhuru Death Chart. There is somebody who up through
people.
Episode 19 actually just lists every character that has ever appeared on the show.
Yife.
Yeah. Whew. They put in a lot of work and we salute them.
Glad to see that Slam is probably safe here.
Yeah.
Yeah. So again, Slam.
Wendelbarge, big also voice.
Oh God. Like literally, dear listeners, the HP, everyone has like a number in here. The thing that is under Spitz says Spit will never die.
Spit.
So
Prospector.
Mad.
Spit
so
will never die.
Fucking mad.
That means you won't get upgrades if you assign Spit to a task. But if we do roll Spit on the chart, he's essentially a free space because Spit will never die.
Okay, great. All right. Cool. Thank you.
So stepping back into our narrative, you know, Gable, that you could assign crew members to go out and perform this task. There is a chance that they could roll failures and it risks their death.
Sorry, but in the notes, so did the fan write these notes or did you write these notes,
I think
notes,
I wrote
James?
The notes.
I fucking love the note for Dunstan. The note is, pretty sure this is the chimp from Dunstan Checks In.
Pretty sure, not 100% sure, but you know.
That was me desperately trying to remember who we have added to this crew.
Yeah. Okay, just back in. Gable thinks, which is hard for them.
It's not easy to think.
If we could put exactly one crew member at each of these inlets, and they point out on the map where these potential sandbars that could be deeper or higher, depending on the tide or how the mariner controls the tide, keep lookouts, and at the first sign of any sort of breach, set up a flare, that could give us 30 minutes to an hour of time to prepare.
That would let us know where they are boarding our shores as well. There is one risk that I foresee with that. which is that if they are to send up a flare, that will alert the fleet of drowned sailors to their position.
Well, we don't need a flare if we can have just our fastest crew members who can run.
The fastest crew member that we have is Jonnet, as has been established in a live show segment. He just moves his feet Naruto very, runs. Very fast.
That's right.
I mean, I'm down to help out however I can if
Jonnet,
I needed a scouting, but I
Jonnet,
would want... Right, I would want to kind of be here.
Well, then what would your command be? I don't know that we have anyone on this ship that's a strong swimmer.
Or do we?
So the impression that I'm getting is that Gable would like to assign Ryan Lochte and some other faceless crew members to scout on the beach.
Yes.
All right. So to do that, you'll be rolling two green and one yellow die against two purple and two black.
Against two purple, you said?
That's correct.
Oh, God. Oh, that's fine. That is just three successes.
James is dead.
James dead. James left the frame as I made the roll.
Where did he go?
I apologize. I went to go get dice that I could roll in case somebody died, but I hear that apparently it was a success and nobody's going to die.
Ryan Lochte lives another day.
All right, how many successes?
But he did get mugged.
He did get mugged.
Well, he said he got mugged.
He lied about getting mugged.
How many successes did you say that was again?
Three successes.
Okay. You are going to be alerted as soon as mariners make landfall. So you don't have to worry about any of that. Like, you'll find out as soon as... actually, what is the order? Is it as soon as they make landfall, or are they going to be running back as soon as they see ships?
Didn't you say that there was like an inlet or a couple inlets?
So there is theoretically one decent inlet that will definitely let in all the smaller boats and could potentially let in the larger boats. You don't know. Mm-hmm. So you basically, as soon as a ship passes that area, you want to be informed?
Yes.
Okay.
Any sort of ship.
Cool. Yeah. I think like as soon as a ship crosses that parallel, everybody aboard the Uhuru is going to be notified. So that will give you a full hour's notice before ships can even start lining up cannon fire, let alone make landfall. So you'll have plenty of notice because of that role.
Well, I did a thing. I did some hard work. So.
With that, Jane walks over. Hey, I'm sorry to interrupt the strategy meeting. There are a couple merchants from the town that say they have deliveries.
Oh! Jonnet runs runs out the door.
Gable runs after him.
You run out to the Uhuru, which is under the large tarp that is protecting it from weather. You can hear the howling of winds and the beating of rain outside, but there's a bit of calmness here. The tarp extends well over the docks, and you can see down the gangplank there are two merchants. One, a finely dressed young man, and the other, an older man in a sooty apron with thick gloves, who appears to be at least carrying a sword.
It's Duncan and Alex, our two friends.
Hey, come on up. Get out of the rain.
Come on.
We're planning a battle. Get in here.
Travis, come meet our new friends. Me and Jonnet went on a shopping spree. Come on. This man has your blood.
That's right. I got your blood. Alex says with a wink.
What? Is this the blood?
That's the blood for the coat.
Well, I hope it was useful.
Wow. You are exactly how I pictured you.
You're welcome.
Alex is magic.
You could tell
Did
from
you
the
know
blood,
that?
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, yes, yes. I'm sure we're all very impressed with how magic I am. I would like to be the first to present the present that came from your very good friends who hate you very much. And he'll hold out to you a box that is, you know, large enough to hold the coat. I think it is made out of a fine wood that has like burned into it the logo of Alex's tailor shop.
Gable, Jonnet, you should have.
Wow. Exactly.
Right? Right? I mean,
just...
You can read him like an open blood, you know? It's just...
Hey heroes, it's James, your game master, and welcome to the mid-roll. We're getting things started off this week with a radvertisement, and this one comes to us from the good folks over at World Builders. They just wanted to offer a hearty thank you to everyone who contributed to their Geeks Doing Good mid-year drive. There was a lot of support for the Skyjacks merch in the Indiegogo campaign this year, especially Travis's Nordian handkerchief. You and all the other donors raised over $170,000 to support World Builders. That is going to support a lot of fundraisers this year and in the coming years. Now, if you happen to miss out on the merchandise that was part of that campaign, don't worry. It'll be headed to the World Builders Marketplace soon enough. Once again, a huge thanks to the One-Shot Heroes who supported the drive, and a huge thanks for the good folks over at World Builders for letting us be a part of it and for supporting the show this week. Speaking of Travis's Nordian handkerchief, not to spoil the episode, but that is coming up. So if you did manage to order one, you'll get to hear it described first on the show. I believe we said it was embroidered. The handkerchiefs that we had made were just dyed because embroidery was very expensive, but they are still beautiful. Before we get back to the episode, I want to take a quick moment and thank some of our backers on Patreon. Ray Ellen D'Onofrio, thank you so much. Lucian Brinkley, thank you. Lloyd, thank you very much. Akemi Manawa, thank you. Ya boy, thank you very much. Ryan Mulder, thank you. Sydney Wood, thank you so much. Cheryl, thank you. Chris Fennessy, thank you so much. And Matthew Elmsley, thank you very much. Thanks again to everyone who supports us on Patreon. It would not be possible to make this show without you. Now, with all of that out of the way, let's get back in the sky.
Well, do you like it, Travis?
Well, I mean,
It's a great box. I can't wait to open it up.
Open.
Travis.
Open.
Opens the box.
He tosses it over his shoulder.
Starting with Liz and Tyler, I want to know one detail from each of you about what this coat looks like. I will add the detail of the base design for this coat is very similar to Travis's original coat. So if you're a fan artist or, you know, we have some official fan art for the character, we probably don't need to spend the ludicrous amount of money and time to update that design so much, but there can be neat extra things involved with it.
Yeah, this one does have... a big patch of Taz, the Tasmanian devil on the back.
No, we were starting with Liz and Tyler, so unfortunately I have to strike that from canon.
Very funny.
Travis, Johnny, what's your main weapon?
Taz.
Stop.
my pistols.
Okay. And you don't have... I can't remember. Do you have, like... I want to do like a sleeve. Is that already a like pistol, like all you need to do is like do like a jerking response and then like Assassin's Creed, like pistol in your hand, ready to go.
That's fucking cool as
shit. That is really cool. I don't think that would work with the standard weapon that Travis uses, but I kind of like the idea that there's like a little Derringer slot that's up his sleeve. That's wow. Radical.
Like it's like a last resort kind of like literal trick up his sleeve.
Or like a surprise thing. Like, you know.
Ugh. That's
or
radical.
You could keep gum there.
That's true.
Delicious just,
yeah, one
gum.
Is actually, you know, the left. No, that's great.
One's a gun, one's gum. Excellent.
Oh, wait, hang on.
No, yeah.
It changes, and you have to roll to sit, like one. Depending on the roll, it'll be the gum sleeve or the gun sleeve.
Well, we know that Travis won't bother to remember which is which. So technically, we could do that, and it would be well within the spirit of the game.
We'll play it by ear. What you got, Liz?
It looks like the fabric on the outside is nice and like a little bit decorative, but the inside is lined with thick leather because he gets stabbed so much. So this will, it's kind of, instead of not exactly armor, but it's thick and hard to pierce.
Ooh.
Just in case he keeps on getting stabbed.
I like that. Well, in terms of the Genesis rule set, we can definitely count that as a type of armor, which gives, at least for close range things, I think it would give a black die to opponents trying to stab Travis.
Yes.
By the way, Gable, I know you're going to hate this, but this code is designed to make it harder to stab this man. And Johnny, what about you? What detail would you like to see on this jacket?
Well, what detail would I like to see on it?
Well, again, that's already been struck from canon, unfortunately.
So this is something that the person who made the real jacket that I have talked about that I think is really cool that I want to make real. And I'll expand on it a little, but they described like a handkerchief that has stitched in it the different animal forms.
Ooh.
But I think that it's also like an Illimat board. So I think in each of the corners, like, it has like the stitching of the animal, but then you can also, because the real Illimat board is a handkerchief.
Yeah, that's...
So I think that...
That's true and that rules.
Wow.
Yeah.
Dig it.
So it just came with that, like, you know, in the pocket.
Yeah, I think this is a colorful piece of cloth, too, because this is Nordia, and they have ample reserves of different natural dyes that come from here. It's one of the main valuable exports, and something that helped make the interior of Alex's shop quite beautiful. So you have this beautiful handkerchief that has reds and blues and whites representing your animal forms that can also serve as an Illimat board. And folks, we'll figure that one out, because that's pretty cool.
Small side note, I've been playing Illimat a little bit, and it's really fun. Late to the party, but great game. Really solid.
It's fun, but it's just challenging enough to be like... I would have to work very hard to be very good at this, but I'm good enough right now to be pretty good enough.
And for those listening home in the audience, like, that's how an improviser thinks, is all I have to do is be good enough right now.
Yeah. Yeah, right, James.
If I can roll out of bed and deliver a solid C+, that's fucking choice.
Well, let's move on to Alex has another box, a much larger box, that he sets down in front of Gable. This is it.
Hi! also get presents. Very exciting.
The best present is the present you buy for yourself.
Thank you for supporting me and my purchases.
Open it. I need to see what you think.
Okay. Gable opens the box.
So, Liz, you did decide on purple,
yes,
as a design for the coat. Is there anything else noteworthy that you wanted specifically about the design of the coat?
The thing about, like, I was looking at oilskin coats, but it's all like modern oilskin coats. Mm-hmm. I want it to have something that is particularly useful in the upcoming fight, but I'm not sure what exactly, because like it is pretty water repellent and it probably has a hood, but otherwise I don't have many ideas.
Well, I am going to say that this is an oilskin coat that is also embroidered on the back. There are truly elaborate patterns of stars that cover the back of this coat. You can see different constellations that have formed, that are stitched into it with a fine gold thread. The coat itself has, you know, a basic straight coat design with a flared out piece around the shoulders that will help water roll down off of it. It also has a cape that is detachable from it.
Oh.
And I think the cape has a split down the back, so it looks a bit like wings, but it will cut an incredibly dramatic figure, whether you are sailing through the air on the back of a bird or whirling around in the dance of combat. I think it's got black buttons that are lined with gold. So they move down the center of this coat. I think it's in one of those double button patterns. So you've got some buttons that, like, I think it's called double breasted, right? That's what that is. Yeah. So it's in a double breasted pattern. So it moves very securely. And I think there is also a bit of a break near the waist of this coat. Are you swatting a fly, Tyler, or trying to get
no,
in?
No, we're just looking at Johnny.
Johnny's doing background.
Oh my God.
That's Taz, baby.
That's Taz.
That's a different Taz that I've ever seen, but that's Taz.
That's definitely Taz.
James, you said there was a constellation on the back, right?
Yes.
Could it be the constellation that is the same as Gable's tattoo?
Yeah. Wow. It's got a huge depiction of the morning star on it.
Yeah, fuck me up, man.
I think that moves across. It's sort of on the back over your shoulders. So it is a bit obscured. Like the top of the embroidery is a bit obscured by like the flap that prevents the rain from rolling down you. But it is there in this like large and starry glory. For those who are curious in Gable's official character art, there is an outline of what the morning star looks like on Metatron's head. So, you know, if you're wondering what pattern we're talking about, that's where you can find it. Mm-hmm. The last thing, Gable, the neck on this, did you want it to be one of those that like can stand up, or did you want it to fold down?
Oh no, I want it to stand up very much. Thank you.
Cool. So yeah, there's a little button toggle area that can close up the neck as well. So this is a garment that is full of a lot of movement in it, but still heavy and will thickly resist the rain.
And also looks identical to the official art.
No, it looks much different than the official art, so we'll probably have to get a new thing for Gable. Johnny, you don't get free new art for cutting off your hand. You have to engage with the town.
Okay. Gable's jacket does have Taz on the back, though.
But it's on the other underside. The Taz is just for me. Taz is not for the outside world.
Not in a place where we could get sued, but the audience can have the full knowledge that Taz is there.
He's there. Just yelling.
Taz Taz is a main character on this show now.
Look, if you want to put Taz on the ship, you can put Taz on the ship. I've got a whole chart just for him. With that, Alex smiles broadly. I think someone likes it.
Alex, this Gable, is incredible.
You look so good.
Mr. Madigo, are you pleased?
Yes, it's wonderful. I would just like to hear it from someone else. It's a perfect coat.
This coat was made for you. So yes, it's a perfect coat. I would tell you that I like the way you look in it, but I am blind. So it's going to have to be one of your friends that does that.
But you can tell. You can tell.
If I tell you that it's a good looking coat, can we move on to me?
Travis, it's a very good looking coat. All right.
Travis,
thank you, Jonnet.
Fine.
Thank you, Gable.
And it's specially made for you because everyone wants to kill you all the time.
All the time. Every single moment.
It is customary to tip.
Yes, Travis, it's customary to tip the man.
Yeah, go ahead, bud.
Go ahead, it's your coat.
Well, all of my money is in a different coat somewhere.
Well, just he's pay him in planks. In plaques.
Planks. Sure, here you go. Let's see. Here you go.
He'll move his finger over it. It says you made me a beautiful coat.
How?
And so it is.
How did you... How many... plaque?
One second.
Who's your plaque guy?
Here you go.
His name is Plactrick, and he lives in the bottom of the boat.
Plactrick.
Shut
up.
Oh, good.
List.
Gable gives Alex real money for tipping.
Great. So Alex graciously takes the purse of money that you hand over, nods to all of you. It has been wonderful working with all of you. I will hopefully see you later. Alex makes his way off of the ship, tapping about the boards with a cane, finding his way easily down the plank and back into Upper Nordia. Sort of less charismatic standing there is the blacksmith that you encountered earlier, who's like fidgeting about waiting to present his packages. I didn't know if I had to stay around. Yeah, it seemed like thing.
Yes. Duncan, thank you so much. Also, you did ask us if you could come on the boat, right?
Oh, yes, maybe.
Well, you'll be happy to know that we... I don't know how to tell him that we're fighting and not going.
Really,
you know what? Never mind.
Should have told Alex that too.
Should have told Alex that we're fighting and not going. You know what? Never mind. Everything is good. I would just say, if you wanted to, maybe pack a bag, just in case. It's always good to have a bag for going places.
A go bag.
It's always good to have a bag. I've been saying it for years. It's always good to have a bag.
He says it all the time for years. Mm-hmm.
The other thing that he said for years is, that's not my bag, baby. That was a bit of a catchphrase he was working on for a while.
No.
Mm-hmm.
Cut to 150 years ago where he was wearing a blue suit, a white kerchief, and just having lots of sex. Solid crimes. Yeah.
Good.
Duncan, did you get my spoons?
So, yeah, the first thing that I'll hand over is a small box that contains commemorative spoons.
Spoons. We have our spoons.
What do these spoons look like?
I don't remember.
I think you asked for a spoon that was a depiction of you and Gable standing in front of the Uhuru.
Great.
Or was it just the Uhuru?
I think it was just the Uhuru.
Yeah. I think it says Jonnet Kessler, year 200, and the Uhuru, like, kind of engraved on it. And up at the top of the spoon on the handle, there is a very nice depiction of your ship.
And then, can I just say that, like, our three birds are flying around it.
Ooh, aww. That's cool. Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks, Duncan. This is great. Jonnet is going to put it, like, in his back. Actually, you know what? He's going to take it, and he's going to, like, tuck it in his bandana, like, kind of, yeah. like, right behind the ear a little bit. So it just kind of, like, sticks up like a tiny little antenna.
And against all odds, it looks a little cool.
Just a tiny bit cool.
The next is a large package that is handed over to Gable.
Gable opens it.
And inside, there is a beautiful, extra large cutlass. This would be the size of a longsword for a normal person, but for Gable, it is, you know, a perfect cutlass size.
Does it have all the accoutrement with it, like a...
Yeah, it definitely comes in. It comes in a scabbard. You know, it's nothing fancy apart from the size and length of it. It was difficult to guess what the balance would need to be for someone like you.
Gable is waving it around. And is there anyone walking by?
I mean, yeah. There's a Pliff.
Gable takes a swipe for his belt.
Oh, Cliff's belt, like, it feels like you've barely touched the belt with the sword, but his pants explode off of him.
Gable turns back. This will be perfect.
Clean yourself up, Pliff. We're going to battle soon.
Oh my god.
What's
oh
wrong
my
with
god.
You?
What are you doing, Pliff?
I had this dream last night.
Get out of my sight. You're a disgrace.
Pliff runs across the deck, gets his foot stuck in a bucket, falls to the ground, and rolls across the ground, falling into the cargo hold.
I like him. He's grown on me.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Duncan. This is Duncan. The people of Nordia have such incredible craftsmanship. I think I knew it, but I didn't really appreciate it until now.
I appreciate the compliment. We will be looking forward to seeing you later. Do you have an idea of when you might be departing?
Are you trying to get rid of us?
As does he not know?
He knows he's trying to be a little lighthearted. We don't know yet. We've sent scouts. We're not sure.
We're getting the lay of the land, as it were.
He nods seriously. I will prepare.
And please tell anyone you know just to be on their guard.
He nods again and waves to you as he makes his way back to his shop.
Oh, hey, Duncan.
Mm.
If you come across any bad bog wine, just hang on to that, all right?
Are you saying I've made a bad memory for you?
No.
Because it would be traditional to gift it to me.
No.
No, I'm just saying it might just come in handy to
like
have
if
it.
If someone gave it to someone and then that person just left it and it was just around, if you had it.
No, you shouldn't do that. That's how Axel ended up a mummy corpse.
Okay, understandable.
All right. Yeah.
Great, thank you. Uh-huh. Cool. I still, one of these days, I'm going to get this tradition right.
We're trying.
We'll be right back.
we return once again to the captain's quarters aboard the Uhuru as the captain's council is working through the large sacks of mail addressed to the members of the Uhuru crew and her captain, Orimar Vale. Dear Uhuru, I have a bit of a bad boy reputation, and I'm sexy as hell. My plumage is pure white, and my tail feathers are long and perfect. Everyone knows I'm the greatest griffin ever to soar the skies, and I absolutely love my elite path of solitude. Recently, though, I've been feeling strange. I met a fellow bad boy who I keep thinking about. Their attitude is just so entitled, just as entitled as mine, and it makes me furious. I mean, don't they know who I am? I should hate them. But I also can't stop thinking of the way their green head feathers blend into their elegant neck and the sound of their quack when they're racing and showing off. It just gets me going. What should I do? Should I rip their feathers out and continue my elite path of solitude? Or should I sign up for a chance to stud with them? Please help. Sincerely, Confused in the Clouds.
I'll go. Is this a thing that I should get?
No, I think it's just about two birds who want to fuck.
No, I think It's 1,000% something that y'all should get, as these are characters that you interact with and have interacted. You've been on the back of both of these characters, Travis.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Gotcha.
Wow. It's a metaphor.
I thought this was like a third. A lot of times things are references to other things.
Sometimes they're reference to the thing that we do.
Well, we don't know. Maybe it's a different white peacock or something. Maybe it's a similar bird. A pastiche of the things that we know.
Or maybe it's a Homestuck thing.
I mean, that is always a good fallback.
It could always be a Homestuck thing.
Regardless, I do believe that this refers to two erstwhile members of the crew. We should be thinking of things in those terms.
Well, first of all, Lucas is not a member of the crew. He's a contractor.
That's true. I forgot we do not insure Lucas, but I do want to assert that
he doesn't want to be on staff. He prefers to be a free agent.
Mm-hmm. And Metatron is insured, and as well as Flea. They are both insured.
Cigna.
That's right. That's the sponsorship deal we have worked out.
No, they're sponsored by Aflac.
Okay, that's 100%. That's much better. One contractor. Maybe that shifts our perspective on this. Do we want these birds to fuck?
I'd say, yeah. Why not?
Yeah.
Gable,
what's the harm?
You sound hesitant.
I'm just trying to think of. Lucas doesn't seem the type to ask permission. You know, well, he doesn't need our permission. You know.
Do you think someone wrote this on his behalf?
I think someone's writing fanfic about him.
Well, now that's a much more serious problem.
Because I think Lucas is able to, you know, if he had wanted to have sexual congress with Ferdinand the Duck, then he would have done it. They would have already agreed to the terms and done the deed. I think someone's writing nasty, smutty fanfic about my birds.
And sending it to you in the form of a letter.
Yes, because it's part of it.
It is part of it.
This is all part of it.
I could, as a man of many perversions, I could see how that could be a very big part of it. Well, then we have to go on a mole hunt and root out the member of the crew who's writing up nasty fan fiction to try and get their sick perversions treated as reality.
Well, I guess we should start by rounding up the horniest members of the crew.
smash cut to a interrogation room with a lineup of some of the horniest members of the crew. We can see moving down the lineup that Spit has moved from being an investigator into being part of the lineup. We can see Jerkoff Jerry is there. We
were in the middle of a planning session.
We can see Baritone Barry is there. We can also see that a haunted mummy is there.
What?
A haunted mummy. The horny mummy.
So if I'm to understand this correctly, you've rounded up these members of the crew, and we're just trying to determine which one has been writing perverse fan fiction about other members of the crew and sending it to the Captain's Council as kind of a taunting, psychosexual mind game.
Exactly.
Yes. Yeah. Well,
so
summarized.
Everybody, everybody reach into your pockets and empty them out. We barge into your rooms while you're having your alone time. So if you were writing something, you likely stuck it in your pockets very quick. Like, so everybody turn out your pockets right now.
I would like to point out that Jerkoff Jerry's hands have been in his pockets since he entered the room.
Yes.
Yeah, I'll turn them out. I'll turn them out in just a minute. Just give me a minute.
Stop it. Stop it. Turn them out.
So I
hold on.
Jerry?
Jerry?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, no, you can go, and by the time you're done, I'll probably be ready.
Really?
Okay. Yeah. In my pockets, I've just got some bits of coin, a couple condoms, a pen and quill, framed picture of Griffin, and that's about it. Pretty big pockets.
What? Which Griffin do you have a picture of?
It's not Metatron. It's not Which one is the
And it's not, it's obviously not you. Obviously not.
And do you really carry around an 8x10? A framed 8x10 everywhere you go?
Well, an unknown bird.
You want me to carry around a 5x7? Come on, man.
Baritone Barry very tall, has very deep pockets.
How do they talk about picture sizes in Europe?
Hmm?
Do you mean, you know, like are the dimensions like 46x22 or whatever?
Yeah.
Probably that.
Huh. Or do you think maybe they just adopted, like, you know, if you're going for an audition and they're like, okay, we need your resume. Maybe they just kind of adopted the... Who invented photography?
No, okay, we're moving on.
Photography is... Again, we have to solve this Scooby-Doo-esque mystery.
Sounds like he's stalling. All right?
He's stalling.
This is Travis.
Look, if I wanted two birds to fuck, I would take it into my own wings.
That's a fair point. It looks like Spit had in his pocket just gum. Just used chewed gum. Just
varying colors and sizes.
Just a big gumball, huh?
You know what this is about, and you know what it's for, and I don't even need to say it. So let's all move on.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it comes as a surprise when I turn out my pockets and there's just a hole in my pocket.
Yeah, just big holes in that pocket over there.
Not really a pocket so much as a place where your pants used to be. Yeah, sleeve.
But what about you, haunted mummy? What do you have in your pockets? And also, we've never really established there being a haunted mummy on the ship.
Oh, me? It's just me, the haunted mummy you always known.
No,
your good friend. Mm-mm. A haunted mummy.
I know no mummy. Nodos approaches a haunted mummy and in one quick motion says, "Let's see who you really are."
All right, turn around, unraveling.
It's me, Jacinto Wrath. And also me, Jacinto Wrath. That's right.
We knew it.
We want those birds to fuck.
Okay. I hate it.
We think they'd get along. They've got so much in common.
Hey, Jacinto, just because you may want something to happen doesn't mean that it has to. Those birds, it's up to them. All right? You can't force love.
In all the classic plays, everybody is always playing psychosexual mind games to get each other's friends to fuck. That's the whole point of Much Ado. That's the whole thing.
I know.
I think there's also a murder in that one.
They fake a death, which is also its own kind of psychosexual mind game.
Yeah.
So I feel like I'm in the clear.
Jacinto, you are almost never in the clear. You have never been in the clear since you stepped into either universe that you have occupied.
No one's liked it, no one's asked for it, and no one has continued to even think about it until you present yourself yet again.
Your existence is a psychosexual mind game.
Well, maybe it is. And maybe I would have gotten away with it if it weren't for you.
No. Bye. Stop writing us letters.
Campaign Skyjacks is a One-Shot Network production. For more information, be sure to follow us on Twitter at CampaignPod for updates about live shows and other events we might be doing.
In the universe of Starwall Odyssey, space is made out of the collective imaginations of all the thinking beings who live on various planets. These worlds are connected to each other through imagination. Common themes and ideas are strings between universes. And to get between them, people fly wooden ships that look like animals, which are powered by emotions. Also, people communicate with each other by contemplating orbs. The only way you can take pictures is getting stared at by a big psychic bug. And people have already declared victory in a war over the very concept of evil. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Starwall Odyssey follows the adventures of the hapless inhabitants of the Lucky Finn tenement building, who suddenly find that their apartment is actually a spaceship, and that they're lost in a sea of boundless imagination. It's an actual play starring me, James D'Amato, Mel D'Amato, Ali Grauer, and Drew Merzieski, as we playtest the No Kings system, which will hopefully one day be the Skyjacks role-playing system. It toes the line between weird and wonderful slice of life and high-flying space fantasy. You can sample the first 5 episodes by searching for Starwall Odyssey on your favorite podcast app, or get the whole thing by heading to patreon.com/oneshotpodcast and signing up for $5 a month or more. You can find more great gaming shows over at oneshotpodcast.com, like Session Zero. Session Zero is a discussion podcast that seeks to explore the psychology of role-playing. Each episode will feature role-playing concepts, stories, and tropes viewed through the lens of psychology by clinical psychologist Porter Green and industrial organizational psychologist Steve Descant. Be sure to join them on the couch for the next session. Jonet Kessler was played by Tyler Davis, who can be found on Twitter and Instagram at Tyler A. Dave. Gable was played by Liz Anderson, who can be found on Twitter at Liz_... or on her podcast, Paired. Travis Madigo was played by Johnny O'Mara, who can be found on Twitter at Johnny in Briefs or on his podcast, Dilettante Ball. I am James D'Amato, your host and game master. You can find me on Twitter at OneShotRPG or on my other podcast, One Shot. The original music featured in this production was composed and performed by Arnie Parrott. You can find Arnie on Twitter at ArnePArrott. And you can find more of his work at atptunes.com. This episode was edited by Casey Tony, who can be found on Twitter at Casey Pony, spelled CaseyPoney, or on his own podcast, Neoscum. Our logo was designed by Fiona Shea, who can be found on Twitter at Fiona Pup. The world of Sphere was inspired in part by the music of the Decemberists and the card game Illimat, property of Together Studios.
The game used in this production is a modified version of the Genesis role-playing system that was created by a talented group of game designers who were fired by a private equity firm owning Fantasy Flight Games. There are no kings. Take flight, heroes.
Strangers, you've ever been kind, and once for our friends ne'er rise. Twice to the dearest we're leaving behind, who know we can never deny the call of the skies.